Word on Today FM.
And so let's go to the Culture Club. Are you aware of Against All Certainty, which is an album of poems written and read by Michael D. Higgins? Well, our guest, the man who assisted the president in this venture, is Miles O'Reilly, who wrote the music. And before we talk to Miles, let's just hear a little bit from Against All Certainty, the title track from the album.
There is something so easy about certainty. In front of the shrine of St. Jude, the little white-haired lady looks anxious. In the main aisle, the middle-aged man in a grey suit and a beautiful, fresh, pink face looks certain. It is, I suppose, something like the difference between saving certificates and a lotto ticket. But I want her to win with St. Jude, at least share the jackpot, and I wouldn't collapse if he lost some of his certificates. Or is it I envy his certainty? Recalling times leaving the intimate smell of the confessional, I bent my head with that great relief that forgiveness was certain, and the sun shone with a blinding energy in my eyes when I came out, and the gravel sank to me outside the church under my foot.
President Michael D. Higgins, Against All Certainty. Miles O'Reilly, you're very welcome to the Culture Club. Tell us, how did you get involved in this project, and what are you trying to do in putting the president's words to music?
I was approached by, I've done some work with Clatter Records. I'm sure you're aware of Clatter Records. Garth de Bruin was running it from the 70s. And I've done some work with them, with Ronan O'Snoddy. And they thought I might be the perfect fit to provide the music, the backdrop to Michael's words.
And then how did you decide on the type of music that would be appropriate?
Yeah, it was a lengthy enough process. I got a recording. There was already a recording done by Clatter Records where they went to the Oris and they spoke to Michael D. And they got a little over two hours of Michael D. just going through a lot of his different poems and introducing them. And this is the audio that I received as a file. From there on in, I did a lot of listening, a lot of deep listening. There was a motif that started to stand out after I'd listened a lot, and the poems about his childhood and about his very early years seemed to resonate with me, and I think they'll resonate with everybody, really. So I kind of then was able to select a narrative of 10 poems that formed a kind of a narrative, and from there I was able to visualise each of the poems myself and imagine what their soundtrack would be.
And what sort of reaction have you received from President Michael D. Higgins to it?
Well, I was quite nervous sending off the first bunch of mixes and expecting to get notes back. But I was very, very surprised when they said, "Don't change anything, we love it." And this is Michael D. now and his people and Clatter Records. They all loved it, which is very unusual in my line of work. It's normally a bit of work goes into having a few changes, you know.
This is coming out on this week, the 5th of September. It's going to be in a number of formats, including a CD hardback, a 60-page hardback book with essays, poetry, forewords and pictures. And it's going to be a coloured vinyl disc available as well. This is a big production. Do you do this type of thing regularly? Because you're a composer, you're a musician, but a lot of people might also think of you more as a filmmaker, particularly having made, what is it, over 100 music videos during your time.
I'm addicted to putting things online. That's one friend of mine said. I love music. I have a deep, deep passion for music. So Yeah, I listen to music a lot. I've learned a lot of things through music. I'm not a big reader, but I since I was very young, I love music. But, I'm ADHD as well, so I have trouble remembering what happened 5 minutes ago. So with music, and especially with ambient music, there's it's like the mood stays with you afterwards. It's a mood I can carry afterwards, and a feeling and an emotion I can carry with me afterwards.
Okay, well, let's go through your Culture Club choices. And I enjoyed the story of the first single that you ever bought, which is from the 1980s, and the Thompson Twins' Doctor, Doctor. Tell us all about this.
Yeah, my mum had the radio on constantly, and as growing up, we would have. I was able to pick the music for dinner, so I was able to choose what I wanted to have on as a dinner backdrop, you know, to our conversations at dinner as early as 6 or 7, I think. And so I was well aware of my favourite pop act on the radio at the time was the Thompson Twins. We had caught a glimpse of them once in Dublin, walking around in Dublin, and some screaming people as well. And I was fascinated by them and that they're real people as well. I bought their single Doctor Doctor actually in 1983, I think it was. And then I saw them in Live Aid and doing their thing in Live Aid on the stage in Wembley. And then literally, very strangely, a couple of months later, there was a knock on the door, and I answered it. And I'm only a child at the time, and it was the lead singer, Tom Bailey, standing at the door, wanting to speak to my parents.
What did you think when you saw the lead singer from Thompson Twins standing at your front door? And why did he want to talk to your parents?
Well, I couldn't believe it. I'm so young, actually. I lived in fantasy mostly when I was young, alone in the Wicklow Mountains. So it wasn't a surprise to me then that he would manifest in front of me. But he went into a living room with my parents, and they spoke at length, and I could just hear murmurs. A month later, my parents sold the Thompson Twins. Essentially, they sold them our house. So I think it was really a case of the Tom and Alana from the Thompson Twins were looking for somewhere to live in Ireland. There was massive tax breaks at the time, living in Ireland. It was much worse than the UK for a musician. So they were looking for somewhere, and they saw our house, and they had the guts to knock on the door and say, we want to buy your house.
They must have offered a good price for your parents to agree to it.
I'll never find out. Yeah.
And did you move somewhere nice afterwards?
Yes, we moved to Dublin, actually. We moved to Dublin. And I got to do my secondary school education in Dublin, and I grew up very fast in the city, having spent all my life in the country.
Let's hear a little bit of the Thompson Twins and Doctor Doctor.
I saw you there, just standing there, and I thought I was only dreaming. Then once again, you said you would come and dance with me. Dance with me across the sea.
Thompson Twins and Doctor Doctor. Now, Miles, a favourite album. This is one that I have not heard of previously, but I suppose it falls into the ambient genre that you say you love so much. Mm. It's by Stars of the Lid, and it's called Their Refinement of the Decline. Tell us a little about this.
A good friend of mine, Donal Dineen, DJ, thought I might like it. I would have to explain ambient music. I'll try very briefly, but it's music that doesn't want to be heard or listened to. It's music that you listen to but don't, or hear but don't listen to. You know, it doesn't. It's like it replicates sounds that we hear in nature, like waves or like leaves in a tree. The sound that wind might make if it hits off something, and it basically tunes those sounds and turns them into notes. So it's a lot of drones, a lot of wind, a lot of kind of rain noises, except they're musical, and. You can add some structure to it as well, and but not too much melody. It's not music that's supposed to stand out, and its purpose being that it's more like then in a room when you have it on, it's more like a perfume, and it kind of complements any dialogue in the room. It gives you a I love it because I'm not somebody who talks often, you know, so it's my. Ambient music is my way of connecting with the world, really. And when I discovered this album, it was a very important time in my life. It really helped me get through an accident I had in 2015, where I almost died. So I had a bit of PTSD. And so ambient music was able to really connect me back to reality after that accident.
You're all good now, are you?
I'm great now, actually. No, it was a case of sepsis. It's just a really, really unlucky to get sepsis in my neck, and it almost took me.
Okay, let's hear a little bit from Stars of the Lid, the album and their refinement of the decline. This is called The Evil That Never Arrived. Okay, that's Stars of the Lid, and that's The Evil That Never Arrived. And we're going to continue the theme, I think, of ambient music, because your favourite band or artist is a man called Ian Hawgood. Tell us about him, please.
Mm-hmm. I did a lot of listening in 2015 to ambient music, a lot of different artists, and I actually thank, I don't often thank Spotify, but I do for that period of my life, because it suggested all these other ambient artists, and there was kind of it's very niche, so I had instant access to all of the artists in that genre, and Ian Hawgood stood out to me as the one. He played the right heart strings. You can hear that music is very minimal, but it's really just notes with the tail off very softly, like wind or the sea. And Ian Hawgood's notes were the ones that resonated with me, really, with my heart, you know.
Let's hear God Complex from one of four 2025 albums available now on streaming services.
Thank you.
God Complex by Ian Hogood, who is the favourite artist of our guest today in the Culture Club, Miles O'Reilly. So, best gig you were ever at, what are you going to nominate for us, please?
I definitely the best singer that I've ever been in front of, Fergus O'Farrell. Fergus O'Farrell, I don't know if you know, in the band Interference, and he had a condition called muscular dystrophy, which meant that in the end, nothing else in his body worked. He was literally disabled everywhere except for his voice. And he sang until the very end. It's a very powerful film at the moment that's out, at the moment, Breaking Out, it's called, with Glenn Hansard. And there's scenes in that film where Glenn Hansard fills his lungs with a pipe. Literally, Glenn is blowing air into his lungs just so that Fergus can get a note, get the right notes out when they were recording his very last work. But when I saw him maybe 10 years ago, he had the use of his hands, but he was in a wheelchair. And I've never quite heard a voice like it. He had such control of the wind that passed from his lungs up into his mouth and past his teeth. He knew this instrument more intimately than I've ever heard before. And it's really, I didn't even hear the lyrics mostly. I was just enchanted by the tonality of his voice. Yeah, Fergus O'Farrell, a great loss. He died in 2015.
Okay, well, let's just hear a little bit from a 2003 performance in Other Voices. This is American Townland by Interference with Fergus O'Farrell singing.
American Townland, snow and Iceland, Russian farmland and the sword of Islam. The state of New Israel remembers Belsen. Now there's sand for Palestine and grass for Israel. Won't you settle down? Stop fighting for your gods. They can't hear you now. Now with the noise of your guns, oh, settle down. Stop fighting for your gods. They can't hear you now. Now with the noise of your guns.
Okay, that's American Townland by Interference with the late Fergus O'Farrell from Another Voices performance. So, as I mentioned earlier, Miles, as well as being a composer and a musician, you love filmmaking. You've made hundreds of music videos. So tell us about your favourite director, Werner Herzog, and how he has inspired you.
I was really enchanted by his use of sound in film. And the first film I saw of his was a film called The Great Blue Yonder. And the second one I saw was White Diamond. And both these films had a cello going through them. A cellist who became a great friend of mine, who I've worked with a lot since, like a dream come true, Ernst Reisiger from Holland. And these great vocals from a tenore choir from Sardinia. And it was like the music in those two movies guided the editing. It was like the music really informed Werner Herzog what he was going to do. And I quickly realised from watching then a lot of Werner Herzog films, and I ended up watching 73 of them, I think. I had a lot of time in my hands at the time. But that Werner does use music primarily to guide his edits, and he says that he's one of the directors, as well as George Lucas, who will say that music is 50% of a film, you know. So that was it, really. And it was an introduction for me, I guess, into his way of storytelling was very unique as well. And I learnt a lot of things about telling stories with music that I wanted to put into practice. And literally what followed was 10 years of me filming music, hoping that I could be as good a cinematographer as one of the ones that Werner would use.
A lot of Herzog's movies are subtitled, so what we've had to do is take a clip from one of his English language documentaries. This is from Into the Abyss, in which he talks to Michael James Perry, a death row prisoner, just days before he's due to be executed.
Michael Perry, now from all of us, the whole team here, we would like to offer our condolences. Your father passed away.
Okay, on the 10th. My dad died 13 days ago.
13 days ago.
Yeah, on June 10th.
But you will die, or you are scheduled for execution in only 8 days.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
You know, I'm a Christian, so, you know, I believe that, you know, paradise awaits one way or the other. So I tell people all the time, I'm either going home or home. So I'm either going home to the world or home to God. So, you know, as the days get closer, I can feel the pressure on my shoulders. They call it clinical depression, where I just start having less motivation to do things, less energy. You get frustrated at the system. How can they not see, you know, my situation is wrong? You know, I used to write all the time and have a lot of energy, and I just don't have it anymore. I just feel like I've been beaten down.
I have the feeling that destiny, in a way, has dealt you a very bad deck of cards. It does not exonerate you. And when I talk to you, it does not necessarily mean that I have to like you. But I respect you, and you are a human being, and I think human beings should not be executed as simply as that.
Right.
Okay, very interesting. You're not one for theatre, I believe, when we asked you for a favourite play or musical.
Yeah, I'm not great with sitting in a dark room with lots of people. It's I don't know why. I'm not great in the audience at any concert. I've walked out of a lot of concerts with my favourite musicians as well, just because I can't sit still.
Do you need to have the camera in hand and be working?
Totally. I mean, when I found out that when I had a camera, I could enjoy a concert, but then I didn't stop going to concerts up until now, at this day, really.
Can I ask, when did you get your diagnosis of ADHD?
I'm self-diagnosed. I am on a HSE waiting list for the last 2 years to get my official diagnosis. But thank God with AI and ChatGPT and Gemini, and there's a couple of different ones that I've used to give my given me an assessment with artificial intelligence, and it's nothing I'm surprised about. But I am on a waiting list to get an actual diagnosis. I don't want the medication or anything like that. I just, you know, I would just like to be able to talk more publicly about it.
Why?
I have a particular creative process that I've realized is very different from everybody else's creative process. And it's kind of, I've never understood why I couldn't work in teams, and like why I'm not a movie director and directing a lot of people. Why I'm such a lone wolf is that I have this very particular way of working, and I'd like to be able to discuss that in the future with maybe children who have the same condition that I do, and let them know that it's not difficult to, you know, manifest your creations from nothing. You can do it on your own. If you have your own process, you can really lean in, you know, and create your own methods of doing things.
We asked you for a favourite book or author, but you don't read much. Is it because of ADHD?
Yes, no, I'll read a page and I'll realise I didn't read anything, and I'll have to read it again. And then the next page, I'll have to read that 3 times. And it's not that I don't remember, it's that I'm just very slow. And education, it would have been difficult for me too, secondary school, and my Leaving Cert was a disaster. I'm just, you know, yeah.
It didn't stop you going on to do lots of really productive things, though, did it?
No, it didn't. And I think I'm one of the lucky ones in that my mother was very encouraging, and she knew exactly if I wasn't doing my homework that I was actually doing something else that would be constructive, you know.
But there were some books you did enjoy, particularly as a teenager, weren't there?
There was. I mean, Edge of the Seat stuff is Robert Ludlum. I mean, there was the movies that came out, the Bourne Identity movies, and they were great, but they weren't the books. And the books are incredible. Every paragraph kind of had me hooked. There was no way that I would zone out. If something doesn't happen in about 5 minutes, I kind of zone out. So Robert Ludlum is an incredible writer for that. He action-packed.
Well, let's just hear a little bit from the audiobook of The Bourne Identity.
Two abrupt explosions pierced the sounds of the sea and the wind and the vessel's pain. They came from the dimly lit cabin that rose and fell with its host body. A man lunged out of the door, grasping the railing with one hand, holding his stomach with the other. A second man followed, the pursuit cautious, his intent violent. He stood bracing himself in the cabin door. He raised a gun and fired again and again. The man at the railing whipped both his hands up to his head, arching backward under the impact of the fourth bullet. The trawler's bow dipped suddenly into the valley of two giant waves, lifting the wounded man off his feet. He twisted to his left, unable to take his hands away from his head. The boat surged upward, bow and midships more out of the water than in it, sweeping the figure in the doorway back into the cabin. A fifth gunshot fired wildly. The wounded man screamed, his hands now lashing out at anything he could grasp, his eyes blinded by blood and the unceasing spray of the sea. There was nothing he could grab, so he grabbed at nothing. His legs buckled as his body lurched forward. The boat rolled violently leeward, and the man whose skull was ripped open plunged over the side into the madness of the darkness below.
Wow, there's a lot going on there, Miles, isn't there?
Exactly, isn't there? And it doesn't stop, it's relentless. The Bourne Identity, I think it's three books in total, and they're really fantastic. And fantasy books would have been my thing as well. Apart from Lord of the Rings, that was a difficult read.
But your childhood television pick is one that quite a few people have brought up over the years, MacGyver.
Yes.
Why did that resonate with you?
Well, you know the way... Back then, Channel 1 and 2, and the one show that we had really was after the news, the adult program, was MacGyver. I think it was a Thursday was the top spot. But I just loved the way MacGyver, about three quarters of the way in, he'd be in serious trouble and he'd look around him for a way to fix the trouble, and he'd literally... get himself out of trouble with whatever he finds, you know, these found implements like a sellotape and a hammer. I just thought that was always so brilliant. I always waited for that moment. And like kind of going through life, you know, ADHD myself, it was kind of like a textbook of how to get myself out of trouble.
Okay, you don't really go for much television now, though, do you?
No, I do love great deep movies. I do like to be immersed. When I'm in the right mood, it really happens. But most of the time, much like my reading habit, I like fast-moving, fast-paced things like science fiction or zombie films or apocalypse films. And I don't really remember any of them. They all seem to be the same film.
But this sort of goes against your love of ambient music, doesn't it? Which is sort of more slower and reflective, because we're coming to the end and we're getting to your buried treasure, and you've gone for Brian Eno's Thursday Afternoon.
Yes, exactly. Like I said earlier, ambient music has been my way of really connecting with the world, because my mind is very fast-paced and there's quite a lot of voices in there, and so it's nice that I've been able to really train myself to slow down and meditate, essentially, with ambient music.
Let's hear a little bit of Brian Eno's Thursday Afternoon. Tell us a little bit more about that, please, Miles.
It's very calming. It's, well, Brian Eno, I think, really is the hero, the legend of ambient music, because he's so able to articulate why it's necessary to have music like that in your home, perhaps, if you're studying. There's a trend at the moment, study music or focus music, but that's the same as ambient music. It's something you have on your home that just. It's just like an incense. It's lighting a stick of incense and having that on in the home. It's just like my home is a room. When the ambient music on, it's a room it's like a kitchen that has no smell of cooking. And as soon as the kitchen has the smell of cooking, it's alive. And for me, ambient music does that to a room as well. And with the album with Michael D, that's all I wanted to put under Michael D's voice was that as well. Just the smell of cooking, the life of a room is there, you know.
Miles O'Reilly, it has been lovely meeting you. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. And congratulations on Against All Certainty, the album of poems written and read by President Michael D. Higgins, for which Miles has written the music. Thank you, Miles O'Reilly, for being with us.
The Last Word on Today FM.